Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Big night with the first of the presidential debates. We'll get into what, certainly what I would like to hear. Not sure we'll hear that from either candidate, but what I would like to hear when it comes to some policies and principles, I think we will hear nothing new, mind you, more of the same, and we'll talk about certainly what that means as a Catholic, looking at these candidates, and why, as a faithful Catholic, I can look at neither of them. I think you know that. And there are those who are sick of me talking about Soraya Foss, who will not be at the debate tonight, but still certainly votable. You could do that. We'll get into that discussion. Also, as this situation has developed from Washington over the weekend, the shooter in the mall confessing at this point, admitting to having perpetrated the crime, very clearly indicated in the surveillance video, no question that they had apprehended the right individual, and then undoubtedly confessing. And different in a lot of ways than other things we've seen. We'll talk about that and then the Houston situation today as well. All of that and more back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, back around half. Defense our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, tonight, the big night of three when it comes to what we see coming up in this presidential debate cycle. We kind of get the first look at where the stage will be set. We could see this go back and forth between now and the final debate, and who knows. But we do know this, debates have winners and losers. That's always the case. Someone will come out looking victorious. Someone will come out looking, at the very least, not as victorious as one would hope. So there will be a winner, there will be a loser, that's what happens. And sometimes it's in the eyes of the beholder, but sometimes it's very clear. It's sometimes obvious that someone got the upper hand and delivered a better debate performance. That is certainly true when you look at the 2012 debates, Romney versus Obama, a couple of early victories for Romney, very clear victories, even from those who were Obama supporters, only to have Obama come around in the third round and completely, and I think it had more to do with Romney than Obama, but undoubtedly a victory there, and then which led him on to a recumbent victory as president. So anything can happen. I do think it's a good first look at the attitudes. Certainly what I want to see when it comes to principles is I want to see them both on their best behavior. And I would hope that Trump is able to do that. I think it's only going to be a disservice to him should he show up in his usual form and fashion and begin just nothing but relentless attacks, personal attacks, name-calling, the many things that we saw in the primary debates, which gave him his steam because that's what people saw in him. His supporters like that type of aggressive behavior. I don't. I don't want to see that. I want to see him come away from this, or step into it, I guess I should say, with respect and an opportunity for me to come away and say, okay, I at least respect his abilities of restraint and being able to be prudent and tempered in his approach, show a little bit of virtue in this debate, and time will tell. We'll see if he does. For Clinton, you know, I think generally speaking, she's been respectful in debates. I think that she's been certainly aggressive, used aggressive tactics in her anti-Trump rhetoric on her campaign. So time will tell whether or not the two of them are able to address real issues from a true debate tactic that is going to bring us into at least a better understanding of the issues and why one of these over the other has a better solution. Right? That's what we want. We want to be able to see a true understanding of what these two stand for. Now, I've said it before, I don't care what miracles occur in this debate tonight, I'm not changing my mind. I'm not going to vote for either of these candidates. And regardless of those who tell me time and time again that I'm throwing votes away or that I'm doing something that is essentially heretical, you name it. I've pretty much had every level of criticism levied against me because of my outspoken support of third-party candidate Soraya Foss, who, yes, I know has no chance of winning unless everyone else decides to do what I do and vote for her. Then she might have a chance. She would have a chance. That could happen. So that's an unfortunate, disingenuous attitude to simply say that no one stands a chance when anyone stands a chance with votes. That's what makes the difference. I know we haven't seen that occur, and therefore it's easy to simply say, well, it won't occur, and I understand that. Well, at the same time, I'm sticking to my position, and I'm going to hold true to that promise that I will not vote for either of these individuals. I will vote. It'll be a third-party vote, and it'll be for Foss. Nonetheless, even though I'm not voting for them, I want to see them come away with something of substance. I want to come away with something of substance. I want to learn something. I want to listen to these two and go, okay, wow. That's more than what I read on the policy on the website. That's more than I was able to get in a soundbite from a rally. I'm able now to kind of look at this and go, well, there are actual policies at play that both of these two are beginning to present. And granted, we should have heard a whole lot more, and I think probably depending on how closely you follow these two, I'm sure you've heard policies certainly presented, but tonight to hear them contrasted, that's really what a debate would be ideally for, right? Let's hear the differences. What are you going to bring to the table? Okay, great. And what would you do about that? Terrific. All right. Now, we as Americans can look at the differences here and make up our mind. If you haven't made up your mind, and I don't know where we are on that. I don't know what the percentage is. 47% basically at this point to 47% looks like the statistical dead heat. That means we've got to see a few percentage points sway in one direction or the other when it comes election time, and that's the tipping point that would get one of these individuals elected. But debate performance has, can, and will change those statistics in the weeks to come. But most importantly, really want to see, I just want to see sportsmanship. I want to see it displayed. And the other thing is, and I may be wrong, but I think Trump's got his base. Nope, they're not going to go anywhere. It's only the undecideds or the moderates who could potentially be swayed. And if he goes on attack on this, then I think it's over for him. I think if he treats Hillary Clinton like he did Cruz and Rubio, I don't know. My thought is that it's over for him. I may be wrong, may garner even more support, and there may be those who love that type of in-your-face attitude, even against, and I mean, let's just be as, you know, the elephant in the room here, you know, he's debating a woman. And you can say what you will about what you think about Hillary Clinton, whether you like her or not, or think she exudes feminine qualities that need to be respected. That's another issue altogether, but I don't think he can go on attack in the same fashion he would against the, you know, rough and tumbling sort of rollicking debate tactics he used with the guys. I just don't think he's going to be able to do the same thing. And, you know, he said some pretty nasty things about Fiorina early on, if you recall that. And that didn't necessarily bode well early on. And fortunately, she kind of became a non-issue. I almost think that Cruz brought her back into the equation at the end just to try to derail some of that, or deflect probably is a better word to use, deflect some of the criticism that was coming his way because of the challenges that Trump had seen earlier by going on attack against Fiorina. But where it goes now, we'll know tonight. And after 90 minutes of seeing these two go at each other, my guess is we'll probably have at least a clearer idea if we didn't before. You're going to hear a lot of Catholic voting guides. You're going to see a lot of Catholic voting guides. You're going to hear a lot of things out there when it comes to, we can't do this, we can't do that, we have to do this, we have to do that. There are those who've basically said, you have to vote against this. And even if it is a vote that you're not necessarily comfortable in casting, at least you're not electing this person. I mean, crazy stuff. But the U.S. bishops have issued a guide for faithful citizenship. We've talked about this a number of times. We'll talk about it more between now and the election because I think it's so important that we understand that it doesn't matter who you vote for, quite frankly. It doesn't matter who you vote for if they are somehow upholding the four tenets that we believe as Catholics to be foundational, and that is human dignity, that's the common good, that's solidarity, and subsidiarity. If you can find a way that those, your candidate can fit through that window, as I've said before, that very narrow window, and have at least enough evidence to support that, that's what you have to do as a Catholic. Now, you may be able to do that with Donald Trump. You may be able to do that with Hillary Clinton. I cannot. I can't. But if you can, and you can find a way to say, this is why I'm voting for them, because I see these qualities exhibited, guess what? You have accomplished what you need to accomplish to cast your vote. And that is not saying that you're doing something disingenuous or that you're avoiding foundational issues, I guess I should say, because the foundational issues are those four. Those are the four. There's not five non-negotiables or seven non-negotiables or whatever the heck you're going to see out there in voting guides. There are four primary principles that, again, if somehow you can say, well, I see how my candidate lines up with these four, if you can do that, slip them through the window that's very narrow when it comes to human dignity, common good, subsidiarity, and solidarity. If you can do that, you now have a clear conscience to vote for this candidate. Please understand that. There is no voting guide that's going to say, vote for this person. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Peter Brown, happy to be here. This hour of culture current events. Catholic debate, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook. Leo C. Brown posted the official, apparently, drinking game guide for tonight's debate. You'll take a look at that. You'll see when you're supposed to drink based on certain things that the candidates say. And on this list, and again, you can view it over on my Facebook page, I'm convinced that Trump would be the one to put you under the table. So it would be fun in a partisan environment to have some rooting for Clinton, some rooting for Trump, and then just see exactly where you end up by the end of the night. That would be interesting, to say the least. So have fun with that one. Again, you'll see that on my Facebook page if you want to take a look at the official drinking game for tonight's debate. Switching gears into more serious topics, unfortunately, another shooting this morning in Houston. To my knowledge, as of the moment, no casualties, but injuries from that shooting incident, mass shooting incident. Turned out to be an attorney that apparently was upset about something in his law firm. So, yeah, this is the solution. This makes perfect sense. Yeah, you're angered about something, then yeah, go on a shooting spree. And from what I gather, a lot of weaponry found in his vehicle after he was shot by police officers there. So then you look at that in comparison to what happened over the weekend in Washington State with the shooter walking into a mall. This was a shopping area, by the way, in Houston. Same is true for the situation in Washington, except much more tragic with the five individuals, four women and a man who were shot by the perpetrator there, who apparently had some sort of falling out with his father, young man in his 20s. So we got a couple of situations here that, in my opinion, are almost identical in nature because of the what appears, I would say, from the outside looking in as a very insignificant reason, and then something of this nature taking place. But I don't care, and I've said this many times, I don't care if it is ISIS. I don't care if it's Boko Haram. I don't care if it's, Andres Breivik. I think I'm saying his name, Anders Breivik, whatever, how you say his name. The guy that did what he did in Norway. Look at all of these. There's one thing in common. I promise you, one thing in common. And it is a cry for attention. It's a cry to be seen. A friend of mine posted this on Facebook. I should have reposted it. It's bizarre is what it is. I don't even know a better way. I haven't seen this dynamic anywhere because I guess I haven't been around famous people anytime recently. But Hillary Clinton is standing in front of this audience and everyone has their back to her, taking selfies of them with her in the background. Right? That's what they want. They want them and someone famous. So it's not enough to take a photo of the famous person. Now you got to take a photo of the famous person with you so people know you're there, right? Look at me. I'm the one here with the famous person. And, this cry for attention that we have, and it permeates so many things. I mean, this is why it's it's a blessing. Let's put it that way. It's a blessing to understand what we believe as Catholics. And we don't necessarily do it perfectly. Even those of us who try, we still slip, we fall, we make mistakes, we are selfish, we put ourselves in the picture way more often than we should. But there's this beautiful prayer of the Litany of Humility that basically asks for grace, divine grace, to deliver us from all of these desires, all of these selfish desires. And my goodness, if we can truly embrace that grace to get to that point where we really are others focused, none of this kind of stuff is ever going to happen. And I know I know it's Pollyanna, it's idealistically fantasy land sounding, but what if we started? What if we just started? And we began to say, okay, there's something formative. There's an opportunity and formation some way, somehow. I know we see kids in kindergarten fighting over toys, and we try to teach others to share, but how do we do this effectively? How do we really do it to the point that truly an impact can be made, a positive impact can be made, to where you don't have somebody fighting with their father and then going out and killing five people, or an attorney who is disgruntled in his law firm and goes out and shoots nine people? We got to have a cultural shift. And if you've ever read any of the Stephen Covey work, he talks about these paradigm shifts that we have in our own thinking, that we have in our organizations, and we simply say, okay, we're going to do things differently now. And, you know, I've criticized the JOY acronym. And I said, if your acronym is Jesus, others, and yourself, you're still ending with yourself. It should just be Joe, right? That eventually leads to something, JOY. Or Joe. Joe's not a bad thing if it's coffee, right? Yeah, I consume it all day long. But it's still often coming back to us. And, you know, when we are in this self-absorbed culture to the point that everything is about us, if we're inconvenienced for a second, if we're upset, well, somebody's got to pay for this. I'll make sure somebody pays, because it's about me. I need the attention. And these crazy cries for attention that turn into things that sometimes it's tragic for the individual, sometimes it's tragic for the individual and everyone else or many others involved, could simply be resolved, I believe. And I know, again, it's oversimplifying this, but what if we were taught it's not about you? It's not about you. It's really not about you. You will be fulfilled in ways you cannot imagine when you make everything about everyone else. Make it about everyone else. And then see. You don't believe me? Try it. Make it about everyone else. Try to take yourself out of the equation. Don't put yourself in the picture. Get the heck out of the picture. Who cares? Realize what's going to happen when you take a back seat. Realize what's going to happen when you lavish praise on other people. Realize what's going to happen when you put other individuals in the seat of receiving. And it's not about you. Watch what will happen. See what happens. And my guess is far too few of us have ever been formed in that fashion. And it's tough. I'm a parent. I'm a father of two selfish individuals, just like the rest of us. And I have to find a way to somehow information of these young people to teach them how it's not about themselves. While at the same time, them realizing that they can be fulfilled and have the attention that they're looking for, the fulfillment that they're looking for, which they think is attention, which is really not attention. It's really, you know, there's a lot of ways to achieve affirmation. It is affirmation. There's no doubt about it. But it's less about attention and more about, wow, look at the contribution. Look at what I've done. Look at what I've contributed to that I don't have to take an ounce of credit for. I can sit back and give everybody else a credit. I can pat them on the back. I can say, this was a great idea. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for putting this together. And watch what happens. But we're not trained that way. We're not formed that way. We're not given that opportunity early on. Now, I've said many times, we got 12 years, 12, sometimes 16 years before even post-secondary education, where there could be all kinds of formation taking place. And what if this was truly part of our curriculum, where we were, it doesn't just stop in, hey, you need to share the toy in preschool. But you know what? You really need to learn how to give others credit. You really need to learn how to step back and Let others shine. See what happens. It's going to happen. It's going to come back. It will come back around, but that's not your motivation. It's not because it's going to come back around. It's because you want to see others shine. It's because you want to see them with accolades, and you want to see them with appreciation. Now, the old story, the adage of hell versus heaven, right? Hell is this place where you try to feed yourself with chopsticks far too long to get food in your mouth. And heaven is the same food and chopsticks with one another feeding each other. If we got that, if we could understand that, I mean, yeah, it's... I'm like John Lennon here, right? I'm a dreamer. But it could happen. It could if we begin to shift the paradigm. More to come in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
For listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, back. Minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. I just put up a couple of news stories over there as I was perusing Twitter on the break. An epidemic, really. I think, like we have not seen before, when it comes to drug overdoses, and this particular article talking about Cincinnati, but it's true in many areas of the country. Where I read, I think maybe a week or so ago, a family in Kentucky had lost two members of its family within a 24-hour period to drug overdoses. And, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, this, when we get to the point where we're so convinced that there's no hope, things of this nature happen. And this is, it's an unfortunate reality that I think we see more and more all the time, because again, it, and what I've seen is that it really knows no socioeconomic boundaries. It's not necessarily about those who are destitute because of poverty. It's just, you know, it's no different than what we see in these mass shootings. Oftentimes, it's just a symptom. It's a symptom of the deeper issues that are there, that plague us, that plague our culture. And now, when we have this expectation, is all I could say, an expectation of some sort of whatever, something. We expect things to be better. We expect things to be different. We expect all of this. And then we get to the point where we're so completely, we've kind of disenfranchised ourselves. It's unfortunate. Also, more images coming out of Aleppo now. We know that just a critical situation. We had the aid caravan going into Syria bombed. There were those who said that it was undoubtedly Russian planes in the air. Don't know that we'll ever really know. No one's going to claim responsibility for this. And, you know, bad to worse as the situations continue to get it's just devastating for the Syrians in that area. And I know every time I talk about Syria, I talk about that group, always on my heart, always on my mind, from World Youth Day so many years ago, these beautiful kids. I mean, just beautiful inside and out. Sharing, talking, hanging out, speaking perfect English, exchanging trinkets and snacks and whatever with our group. And I just think, my goodness, you know, what happened to them? I just pray that they're safe and well, and who knows? Who knows? And then we have these outrageous policies that some would want to put forth to say, we need to not accept these individuals. I think Donald Trump said, yeah, I would say no. That's where I saw this somewhere just today. Yeah, I would say no, you can't come in here. No. No, we don't have the means to help you. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in never having the means to help. Because there's no evidence of that. Certainly in Scripture, we don't see anyone having to turn people away because they can't be helped. What we see is God making the difference, whether it's the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000, where God obviously provides because one boy was willing to give what he had, because there were faithful workers willing to divide this and to share it, and because of the willingness of those individuals to participate in trust, maybe even doubting while they're doing it. How can this be? But you know what? They did it. They had at least the initial faith to go, okay, I don't know how this is going to work out. I really don't, because I don't see this coming together. But you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to trust that if I leap, God's either got a net or a parachute somewhere along the way. Something's going to happen. And sure enough, that happens. But when we simply say, nope, we don't have it, well, now we've created the problem, because we have no faith. We have no trust. It's one thing to doubt and wonder, how can this happen? But you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do it. I'm going to faithfully do it. I don't know. I have no idea how it's going to work. No clue. Don't pretend to know. I may be even doubting myself if it can, but you know what? I'm going to do it because I believe it's God's will. That is faith. There's no faith in, I'm confident this is going to happen because everything indicates that it will. You know, it's when nothing looks like it's going to work, right? That's when faith has to take over, and you're just willing to step out. It's like Indiana Jones, right? Take the leap of faith. Now, he threw the gravel out there to kind of, oh, yes, the bridge is invisible. Or it's an illusion. You don't see it necessarily. But that's kind of what it takes. And it takes that in being willing to give of ourselves. It takes that in being willing to have an attitude of saying, you know what? We may not think we have the resources, but we do. There's a lot more. I think if any of us examine what we do, generally speaking, there's a whole lot more we could do, right? I was talking earlier today about bandwidth, kind of personal bandwidth. You know, there's certain things that I've decided I'm not going to do, so I have opportunities to do other things or to fill my time either studying or learning or growing or doing this, whatever. And, you know, I barely watch movies, don't watch TV almost at all, except for maybe one program a week, if that, and no sports, none. Now, that might seem crazy to some, but I just don't have the bandwidth for that. I've got too many other things that I've got to focus on at any given time that I cannot afford the time to do that. I listen to music, but I can listen to music and do other things. But generally speaking, to sit down and really invest that time, I mean, I might see a movie a month, maybe, if that. And there was a time when I would see multiple movies a week. I recall those times in my life. Certainly in college, my goodness, I went to every new release, everything that was in. I was like, well, I'm bored. I got to do something. I had no clue. I had no clue what It really meant to get things done. I thought I was busy in college, but I was bored enough that I had to go to every movie that opened. So I think it comes down to priorities, and it comes down to us deciding, can we do more? And as a country, we need to have those priorities in line. And we need to say, you know what, we can do more. Absolutely, we can do more. And if there's someone in danger and in harm's way, and we're not providing a way for them to get out of that, we need to provide a way. We need to find a way. And refugeeism is so completely different than immigration or migration, or it's just a different, it's a completely different dynamic. We need to understand that. Not that we don't need to embrace immigrants who are seeking a better life, but those who have actually gone through the process of official refugee status, we need to look at that more closely and say, what can we do? How can we help these individuals? And you know, I appreciate so much my own diocese for having the willingness to go and listen to refugees and their challenges. Yeah, they're in a new home, and we could easily say, oh, hey, come on. You're here. What do you need to complain about now? Now you need to just get over it and get on with it, which is everyone's favorite thing to say, who don't have to deal with things that are tough and hard to get over and beyond. And our own diocese taking the time to sit and listen and to pay attention and to address the concerns of a refugee community from the Congo that I've never witnessed before. I've never seen that, where a bishop sits down and listens attentively and wants to be able to be there and to do even more than just, yeah, well, you got housing now. You got government support. What else do you want? And they want fellowship. They want a community. They want to build their faith in ways that will build it back to what they had in their homeland. They want to be able to do things of this nature. They want to be able to contribute. But they don't know how. They don't know the paths to do that. So why would we not? Why would we not give these individuals every opportunity? You know, the one thing I wish that we as Americans, I wish everyone could travel internationally. Wish we could travel and learn about other cultures, see other people, especially as a Catholic. My goodness, World Youth Day, big Catholic events where you see just how universal we really are. Just how huge this community really is. And then to be able to say, why would we deny that to anyone? Why would I close my door to those who are in need? Why would I do that? I know it's a hot topic. We're going to hear about it tonight. We're going to watch this debate.
That's all we have time for. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. I'm almost out. God bless.